President Trump has said enough. We're not gonna allow this to continue to happen.
The United States takes action against China. This is Thursday, the 23rd of July, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. You'll find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, the U.S. president changes his stance on masks and coronavirus. One Australian state rolls all the way back in its battle against the virus. The U.S. says it's done its part in Afghanistan. Now it is the Taliban's turn. It is all on today's VOA Asia. The United States has told China to close its consulate in Houston. Both countries said that on Wednesday, further deteriorating bilateral ties, and a source at Beijing was considering shutting the U.S. consulate in Wuhan in retaliation. Washington abruptly demanded closure of the Houston consulate on Tuesday, China's foreign ministry said. The editor of an official media outlet said China had been given 72 hours to do so. The State Department confirmed that decision and said the move was made to protect American intellectual property and America's private information. Speaking on a visit to Denmark, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo offered no specifics, but repeated accusations about Chinese theft of U.S. and European intellectual property, which he said were costing hundreds of thousands of jobs.
We are setting out clear expectations for how the Chinese Communist Party is going to behave. And when they don't, we're going to take actions that protect the American people, protect our security, our national security, and also protect our economy and jobs. President Trump has said enough. We're not going to allow this to continue to happen.
Ties between the United States and China have worsened sharply this year over a range of issues, from the novel coronavirus and telecoms gear maker Huawei to China's territorial claims in the South China Sea and its imposition of a new security law on Hong Kong. The deterioration comes in the run-up to the November U.S. presidential election, in which President Donald Trump and his Democratic rival Joe Biden have appeared to compete over who can look tougher in response to China. Late on Tuesday in Houston, local media reported that documents had been burned in a courtyard at the consulate. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin said the consulate was operating normally, declining to comment further on the reports.
7月21日, 美方突然要求中方关闭驻休斯敦总领馆.
The unilateral closure of China's consulate general in Houston within a short period of time is an unprecedented escalation of its recent actions against China. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin told a regular news briefing, "We urge the U.S. to immediately revoke this erroneous decision. Should it insist on going down this wrong path, China will react with firm countermeasures." Wang said the U.S. government had been harassing Chinese diplomats and consular staff for some time and intimidating and interrogating Chinese students and confiscating their personal electrical devices, even detaining them. He said the United States had interfered with China's diplomatic missions, including intercepting diplomatic pouches and confiscating Chinese items for official use. He did not specify whether the actions were related to the Houston consulate. A source with direct knowledge of the matter said China was considering closing the U.S. consulate in Wuhan, where the State Department withdrew staff and their families earlier this year amid the coronavirus outbreak that first emerged in the central city. China's foreign ministry did not immediately respond to a request for comment on whether it would shut down the consulate. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. Two Chinese nationals have been charged with hacking hundreds of entities around the world, including U.S. biotech companies developing COVID-19 vaccines and treatments while working with China's security services. South Korean President Moon Jae-in is coming under severe criticism for cracking down on activist groups calling for reform in North Korea. As COVID cases rise, India cancels an historic Hindu pilgrimage to a holy cave high in the snow-capped mountains of contested Kashmir for the first time. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. You're listening to VOA Asia. As the nation's coronavirus cases continue to rise and amid national polls that show Americans overwhelmingly disapprove of his handling of the pandemic, U.S. President Donald Trump Tuesday resumed his appearances at coronavirus press briefings and delivered his strongest endorsement yet on wearing facial coverings. White House correspondent Patsy Wanakaswera has the story.
Only 65% of American adults, according to the latest Pew Research, say they wear a mask in stores or other public businesses. After months of downplaying the importance of face coverings, earlier this week, President Donald Trump tweeted a photo of himself wearing a mask, calling it patriotic. On Tuesday, Trump resumed the White House coronavirus press briefings and signaled his strongest support for masks so far.
I have the mask right here. I carry it and I will use it gladly. No problem with it. And I've said that. And I say, if you can, use the mask. When you can, use the mask. If you're close to each other, if you're in a group, I would put it on when I'm in a group.
In April, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reversed their guidance on face masks and said all Americans, not just medical workers, should wear face coverings. But the president has resisted wearing one in public until earlier this month. He has also avoided a national mask mandate, saying that he wants people to have freedom. A recent ABC News Washington Post poll shows that 64% of Americans disapprove of Trump's handling of the pandemic. Norman Ornstein is a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute.
It's creating even more problems for him as the pandemic flares, including now in areas where Republican governors have taken his cues, opened things up, and now they're starting to see terrible problems with the pandemic, and that makes his job much harder.
The U.S. has more than 140,000 COVID-19-related deaths and more than 3.8 million coronavirus cases, with new data from the CDC suggesting the actual number may be 10 times higher. While the administration insists the number of cases has risen due to an increase in testing, experts say the lack of a national policy on the coronavirus is the reason the country is doing so poorly. William Schaffner is an epidemiologist at the Vanderbilt University Medical Center.
The countries that have done well have had a clear national policy. They've put the public health people out front. The political leadership has assisted the public health people, and they have had consistent, clear messages to the population. The population understands what the program is, and they're enlisted to cooperate. That's a formula for success. By leaving it to the governors, that's a formula for chaos.
Despite the rise in cases, Americans continue to flock to summer vacation spots like beaches. Different states have different rules, and the federal government's recommendations on masks, testing, and reopening the economy have all been voluntary. Patsy Wanakaswera, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, China has evacuated thousands of residents after a landslide blocked a river and created a barrier lake that threatened to submerge neighboring villages as large parts of the country reel under some of the heaviest rainfall in decades. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for being with us on VOA Asia. Face coverings will be compulsory in the lockdown Australian city of Melbourne as the COVID-19 crisis intensifies. Residents can only leave their homes for work, study, exercise, and other essential business. Australia has had 12,428 confirmed coronavirus infections. 126 people have died. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The face covering order is the first of its kind in Australia, which has recorded more than 500 new cases of COVID-19 in the past 24 hours. It's the single biggest daily increase since the pandemic began. Most have been detected in the southeastern state of Victoria. Outbreaks have been reported at more than 40 nursing homes, and several prisons have been put into lockdown. Bandanas, scarves and handkerchiefs are all acceptable, as the people of Melbourne are ordered to cover their faces outdoors. Residents are being given official advice on how to make their own masks from clothes and shopping bags. Associate Professor Philip Russo is from Monash University.
It's not an exact science because we're still learning about this every day. We know that it's transmitted through close contact, so physical distancing is our first action in our prevention. And when physical distancing can't be maintained, then that's when masks can come into consideration.
As the crisis continues, travel between Victoria State and other parts of Australia is being heavily restricted and more stringent border controls put in place. About 2,400 new COVID-19 cases have been reported in the past week across Australia. It is a significant number. Since the pandemic began, almost 12,500 infections have been diagnosed. The spike in cases is undermining Australia's previous successes in tackling the virus. This week, a judicial inquiry began into how infected travellers returning to Australia from overseas could have spread the disease while in mandatory quarantine in Victoria. The hearing was told that many recent infections in the state could be linked to breaches in hotel security. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Japan launched a national travel campaign Wednesday that aims to revive a battered tourism industry. But the effort has drawn heavy criticism as major cities have racked up a jump in new coronavirus cases. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Due to a rise in COVID cases, Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti announced that he's considering another strict lockdown, just a few weeks after the metropolis started to ease restrictions. In state prisons, the problem has gotten so bad, California officials are considering the release of about 8,000 prisoners convicted of minor offenses. VOA's Angelina Bagdasarian reports.
California continues to be one of the coronavirus hotbeds with around 400,000 confirmed cases. The situation is particularly grim inside state prisons. To ease the problem, officials say they're looking at releasing 8,000 prisoners convicted of minor offenses with fewer than 180 days left on to serve. Those over 30 who have health problems will be freed first. About 3,000 California inmates have already tested positive for COVID-19. At least 10 people have died. Critics say inmate transfers prompted the rapid spread of the virus in prisons. Since then, state has replaced its top medical examiner for prisons. Former inmates share their experience in prison during the pandemic.
Scary, dangerous, uncomfortable, unpredictable.
The inmates' relatives and close ones are organizing protests near prison walls.
They're dying in there. They're dying.
Free them all.
Free my baby.
Human rights activists say the situation at the San Quentin prison is no surprise.
San Quentin is a very old, antiquated prison. It has a single ventilation system that recirculates air, so it's not a surprise to any of us. Prisons are not meant to be social distance areas.
Vanessa Nelson Sloan is co-founder and director of an organization that helps inmates.
I think, in my considered opinion, would help the most, that is get every single staff member to wear the masks that they have been provided. Prisoners are required to wear masks. The prisoners can be given a disciplinary violation if they don't. The guards are another situation. That, I think, would be the most important thing we could do in all the prisons right now.
The decision to release prisoners is welcomed at the Life Support Alliance. But many here worry that many ex-inmates will have nowhere to go. And since the state's homeless shelters are packed, that makes them risky places to be as well during the pandemic. For Angelina Bagdasarian in Los Angeles, California, Anna Rice, VOA News.
A message from your friends at VOA Asia. Can the coronavirus survive in cold weather? Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you're sick or advised to by local authorities. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
Thank you for being with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Officials in Canada and the United States have agreed to keep the vast international border between the two countries closed for at least another month. As Craig McCulloch reports from Vancouver, two recent surveys of Canadians indicate they overwhelmingly want that border to remain closed due to record high numbers of coronavirus infections in the United States.
In making the announcement, officials in both Washington and Ottawa agreed to keep the 8,893-kilometer-long border closed to all but commercial and essential traffic. This means only commercial goods and people, such as nurses and doctors, who live in one country and work in the other, can cross. Travel for tourism or activities like retail shopping are banned. Started on March 20th, the closure is supported by two separate opinion polls taken this month that found more than 80% of Canadians want the border to remain closed to non-essential traffic. David Webb is owner of the Ocean Rose Bed and Breakfast in White Rock, British Columbia. The Vancouver suburb sits right on the international boundary. Webb can literally see the Peace Arch border crossing and the American border town of Blaine, Washington from his home. 40% of his business is from the United States, but he agrees the border should remain closed.
I agree with that. And one of the things that we have to think about is the people who have compromised immune systems. Both my wife and I have compromised immune systems, as do many other people. And it only takes one person with the virus to cause illness with many, and I think that's what people are looking at here.
One of the polls, done by Nanos Research for the Globe and Mail newspaper, found that only 3% of respondents think the border should open immediately. Nick Nanos, chief data scientist at Nanos Research, finds the results remarkable, considering how reliant Canada is on access to the United States.
It suggests that people who want to open the border immediately are less than a fringe of the population, basically less than one out of every 20. And we don't usually see this type of consensus in the polling data where, you know, upwards of 8 out of every 10 agree to such what I would consider a drastic action, which is to close the border to non-essential visitors. So it's very unusual, but it speaks to the time and the threat that Canadians feel.
Differences in coronavirus infection rates are stark along the westernmost portion of the border. Washington State reported its highest level ever of infections at 1,267 cases and 6 deaths on July 16th. On that same day, the Canadian province of British Columbia had 21 new cases and 0 fatalities. Nearly 6% of those tested in Washington State were positive, compared to only 0.5% in British Columbia. Besides being the longest undefended international boundary in the world, the Canada-U.S. border also sees a considerable amount of business. The U.S. Trade Representative estimates that $718.5 billion in all types of trade crossed the border in 2018. That works out to just around $2 billion a day. Craig McCulloch for VOA News, Vancouver.
The U.S. says it has upheld its part of an agreement with the Taliban, drawing down its forces in Afghanistan to 8,600 troops. But peace in the war-ravaged country remains elusive, as Taliban violence against Afghans has surged. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain looks at the prospects for long-awaited peace talks between the Kabul government and the Taliban.
Attacks by the Taliban against Afghans continue to surge, despite pledges to reduce violence. With mounting casualties, the war has entered an even more violent phase, says CENTCOM Commander General Kenneth McKenzie.
And while the Taliban have been scrupulous about not attacking U.S. or coalition forces, in fact, the violence against the Afghans is higher than it's been in quite a while. It's one of the highest, most violent periods of the war that we've seen to date.
Concurring with the grim assessment is Afghanistan's ambassador to the U.S., Roya Rahmani.
It's very unfortunate that the Taliban are continuing to use violence as an instrument of pressure and leverage. And this will not lead to peace.
U.S. Special Representative Zalmay Khalilzad, who signed an agreement with Taliban leaders in Doha in February, is calling on all parties to reduce violence and for the Taliban to start inter-Afghan talks with Kabul as promised. Experts say the Taliban have not fulfilled their part of the accord.
One is to begin the inter-Afghan dialogue, begin formal talks with the Afghan government. That has not happened. And the Taliban is also expected to sever ties with Al-Qaeda, and there is no evidence that that has yet happened yet. And I think that's quite disturbing.
Kugelman told VOA he is optimistic that inter-Afghan peace talks will happen, though he is not sure when. But he says his worst fear is that most or all U.S. troops will leave Afghanistan before the talks begin, leaving the Taliban strengthened on the battlefield and with little incentive to hold serious negotiations with the Kabul government. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Washington.
When the coronavirus outbreak hit Japan, a tourism startup built by an Indonesian man in Tokyo was also hit hard. David John lost his main income in the blink of an eye. But as VOA's Vina Mutati reports, he was able to get up with a little bit of magic.
Not every day is magical unless you're David John. From his house in Tokyo, he performs magic tricks to people of all ages around the world.
You know, I can perform for someone in Lebanon at 10 a.m. and 2 hours later, I suddenly have to visit some homes in Paraguay. 3 hours later, I'm going to visit some family in, let's say, in London. So you basically go global.
And at the end of the one-hour session, he teaches his viewers a simple magic trick or two.
Virtual, tapi.
Although it's virtual, it's very interactive. It's very interesting because it feels as if you are watching it live.
The thought of being a full-time virtual magician never occurred to John, a former IT professional who started a tourism business 3 years ago. For the past 12 years, pulling objects seemingly from thin air was mostly a hobby. The 43-year-old used to arrange and lead tours exploring Japan and did magic only on the side. But everything changed when the COVID-19 outbreak hit the Asian country.
All the tours were canceled, basically overnight, no more. You don't see anything is going to come back maybe in the next few months. But the more you wait, the more you realize, no, it's not coming back this year.
In April, he promoted himself on Airbnb, and since then has performed more than 100 shows virtually. Most of the clients are in the United States. But along with increasing popularity of virtual shows, John also faced increased competition. So John, who's been living more than 20 years in Japan, tried to be different by incorporating Japanese themes and cultures.
Tourism, my other interest, I can try to combine that just to make myself unique. So when people come to my profile, they say, okay, I'm not going to see just magic. I'm going to find out something else from this guy.
For now, John brings Japanese tourism to his magic shows. But he also hopes to be able to bring back magic to his tourism business and entertain visitors. In Silver Spring, Maryland, Fina Mubtadi, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter, at VOA Asia. And you can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Please stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.